All right. Now we do have someone on the line. Please, let's go ahead with our first call. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Yeah, hey, Tip, we can hear you okay. Please, go ahead.
Okay, man. If you could look at Matthew 24:29.
All right. Says in Matthew 24:29, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And you want to look at, compare Matthew 13, verse 6. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. These are your verses. Do you have any question in particular?
Listening to your study there earlier, you said that when the sun is up, some kind of stone ground, and the sun was up, and they had no root. So they fell away and they withered. But I'm having difficulty a little bit.
Right. I understand. Yeah, I understand. I mentioned a couple of times that it seems out of place with all that we're learning about the five-month period because, like Matthew 24:29 says, the sun is darkened, and in many other places, the light of the gospel is out. The moon is darkened. The stars are falling. But if we look at how God defines the sun here, let's see if he does it here in Matthew 13, in verse 21, Jesus is going to explain the parable. And now keep in mind, the seed falls on stony ground, and it springs up right away, like someone who quickly rejoices in the good news of the gospel they hear. But then the sun comes up and scorches it because there's no root and they wither away. So the sun is the one bringing the source of trouble to the young plant. And when Christ explains it, he says in verse 20 of Matthew 13, "But he that received the seed into stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon," and that means immediately, "with joy receiveth it, yet has he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. For when tribulation or persecution ariseth," that's the sun. That's the heat of the sun. That's the source of trouble for the plant, and the source spiritually of trouble for the individual is persecution and affliction for the word's sake. And that's where things start getting hot in the kitchen. You know, it's easy to be a Christian and a child of God when things are going well and people, they have respect for you. They have respect. You're a decent, upstanding, moral person. Your Christian values are strong. And in our society, that's respected. But now you have crossed the line. You've crossed the line. You took the message that was fine for you in your gathering or in your church or over here, and you blatantly exposed it to all of us. You exposed it to our children. You blatantly put it right in front of our eyes. And that is a big no-no in the world. That really is a is traitorous to the world. Remember, the world loves darkness, and the gospel is light, and it was shining very, very bright all over the earth. People couldn't escape it. And then when it didn't happen, well, now all kinds of individuals who were kind of caught up in the euphoria, in the forward momentum of May 21, I mean, it was everywhere. You turn on your TV, there's another story. You open your newspaper, towards the end, it's right on the front page. You see people all over the place, and some people, I think, got caught up, and immediately they liked this, and they joined up, and they didn't know what they were getting themselves into, and from their perspective. And then when things didn't turn out as they had thought, well, now they have to face the troubles that come from their family and friends and neighbors and everyone else. And the heat got turned up, and so they were offended. And it has nothing to do with the light of the gospel, not that sun. It has to do with the heat, the great heat that comes from the sun, as far as that is dangerous to a plant that has no root, and the intense, severe affliction that arose. If someone doesn't have Christ in them, well, they have no grounding. They have no way to survive this. And that's what's been going on throughout these 5 months. As God, He separated the wheat and the tares, that's no longer a problem. That's no longer an issue. He finalized that. But, you know, God isn't fooled. He's not fooled. He knows the hearts of men and all people. And so, in His wisdom, He was testing us all throughout the Great Tribulation with doctrine. The end of the church age, annihilation, Christ slain from before the foundation of the world. And here and there, he hit the target in this person's heart, and he hit the target in that person's heart, and they ended up going away offended for the word's sake. They didn't like that particular thing, but now it's amazing how long some can cling. And God has perfectly developed a final fiery trial. I don't think that any will cling to except God's people. Well, thank you for those verses. And let's go to the next person online. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello?
Good evening, Brother Chris.
Good evening. We can hear you well.
Isaiah
26:20.
Yes, and tell me if that's talking about the 5 months that we're in right now.
Yes, it is. Let's read this. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. You know, indignation is God's anger. It's His anger. And so God is saying, okay, now it's time, my people, come into my chambers. And in, where is that? In the Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 4, it says, the king has brought me into his chambers. And that would be that love story between Christ and his eternal church, the elect. On May 21, God did that. Like the parable of the 10 virgins tells us that the bridegroom was announced to be coming, and then the 5 wise virgins were taken in, and the door was shut, and it left the foolish virgins outside. You know, in that parable, nowhere does it mention being lifted up. Nowhere does it speak of a rapture. There's nothing in that parable that talks about an ascension. All it says was that the bridegroom came, and those that were ready, the wise who were elect, went in, and the door shut. And we know, without question, that the door shut on May 21 because God locked it in with the calendars 7,000 years from the flood. And that hasn't gone away. The 23-year Great Tribulation period just happening to end on May 21st, which is the 17th day of the second month of the Hebrew calendar, which identifies perfectly with the day that Noah and family went into the ark and God shut them in. That's not a coincidence. God put his finger on that day. He said, this is the day that you go in and I shut the door. Now in Isaiah 26, it's plural, shut thy doors about thee, because God is just looking at the multitude of individuals, the great multitude, and he's dealing with millions of people, and he deals on an individual basis, but it's still just the Lord Jesus and the safety in Christ. But as he's looking at the whole great multitude that he saved, and remember, hide thyself. Look at Colossians 3. Colossians 3, verse 3. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. That's only true of everyone that God has redeemed, of his elect. When he saved everyone, we're hidden. Our life is hidden. We're waiting the final day. And so now God is saying to his people exclusively, come into the chambers, shut thy doors, hide thyself because you're all saved. That's the only thing that can mean. Just as we saw in Zephaniah 2, remember that verse that was being referred to again and again and again? Before the decree bring forth, before the fierce anger of the Lord come upon you. And in that context of those couple of verses, God mentioned that we should hide ourselves in him or be hid before his anger comes. And that's what's going on. And this also relates to Elizabeth, who hid herself. How long? 5 months. 5 months. And that's not an accident. That's not an accident. Elizabeth hides herself 5 months and saying, my reproach is removed. And if you read that in Luke 1, it's as though she's saying that for the entire 5 months. That would have to point to God completing his salvation plan and saving all those that he intended to save. Well, thank you for that verse. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call. Is anyone there? Hello? Hello? Welcome.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you. Please go ahead. Can you turn down your speaker's volume?
I just turned it down. Turn it off.
Yes, please turn it down. Yeah, we can hear you very well. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And in that account, he goes through four places, starting at Gilgal, goes to Bethel, and Jericho, and ends up at Jordan. Four places. And along the way, the servants of the prophet seem to know everything that's going on. Although, in retrospect, it seems like they just leave it because once it happened, they wanted to go look for him.
Right.
What it
means spiritually?
And what it means spiritually in terms of where we are now.
Well, you know, I think it has a lot to do with it, but I'm sorry, I don't understand it completely.
Okay.
I do know that when Elijah's taken up, it definitely relates to the rapture. and he's taken up into heaven. And one thing we can get, gain from this is everybody knew it. The sons of the prophets knew it. It was said a couple of different times to Elisha, "Know ye not that your master will be taken from your head today?" And Elisha said, "Yeah, I know it. Hold your peace." And then another group of 50 prophets, sons of the prophets, said the exact same thing at a different location. As you were mentioning, he went from this city to that city. And it was widely known by the people of God at that time that Elijah would be taken up. And I think, again, God is indicating that he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets, and he does not withhold information concerning time and judgment. Just as he has not withheld information from us today concerning judgment day and concerning the coming day that will be here shortly in just a few weeks. But thank you for that question. It's a good question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello?
Chris?
Yeah, hello.
Questions from Dan Vincent on Pal Talk. Actually, he has two questions. Question number one, will the unsaved be caught off guard on October 21, you know, according to what we read in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 2? And also, can we expect the media to approach Family Radio in regards to October 21 being the end of the world?
Well, as far as the first question, people are already caught off guard because it was a spiritual event that took place on May 21. Judgment Day came, and who knows it? God's people. And so it came. Christ came like a thief, and it came like a snare on the world, just as the Bible has revealed. And whether, you know, of course, if they don't recognize that Judgment Day is already here, well, they're not going to see October 21 either. And the whole period of judgment has come upon them. Now, as far as the media, I don't know what Family Radio is going to do. You know, they're in California, and we're in New Jersey, but normally I'm in Pennsylvania. And I can only speak for me personally. And I know if a reporter called me and said, "I want to talk to you about October 21, I would say, "I'm sorry, I really have no interest in discussing that." It's already been declared. It's already been made known all over the world prior to May 21. We got the word out to all nations, and I think that was it. That was God's intention. You know, it's look at Family Radio, and look at the funds they had. And some of you, I know, remember, say, when Dave Morrell would give a talk at Towson or one of the conferences, or Day in the Words, and he would point out how they would go into this city or this country to look for a good deal on tracks. And he would point out the circumstances that developed as God led him to an individual, give him a ridiculously low price, like a penny a track, a penny and a half a track. And again and again and again, and Mr. Camping has given similar accounts of how Family Radio was formed and how God was in control. And, you know, we've all heard the Day in the Words, and we've heard, I think, truthfully, how frugally, how carefully Family Radio is run with, you know, they pinch pennies. They pinch pennies, and God has blessed that for a long time, for decades. And God would open up the door so they get those deals, So they're able to buy that station at a discount rate, and we hear these things, wow, you know, that's incredible. It can only be God working behind the scenes. And of course it's God who has kept Family Radio going. How could they be in business declaring the gospel they've declared, especially over the last 10 years, offending the church incredibly, and doctrine after doctrine, even their most loyal listeners, as far as those that would be tuned in and maybe even given of their money, who don't like this teaching and don't like that teaching, and they just keep at it. They never give in to respect of persons. They continue to teach the truth, and you would think, well, they'll definitely collapse under a financial burden. Nobody will support them, and actually they grew, and it grew and prospered, and until they had a storehouse. I like to think of Joseph's grain. They had a storehouse of funds available. And then the time came where they decided to go all out. And they used the funds for billboards, TV commercials. We're familiar with it, the 1,000 different ways they used the funds. And pretty much, even though they kept some in reserve to function in paying their bills, that large storehouse of grain was used up. And some people would like us to think that God, who carefully looked out for them and pinched pennies for year after year after year, that they got that track for a penny and a half, that finally at the end, he allowed them to just go and waste millions of dollars and to waste it in abundance. Because, well, May 21, nothing happened. It's October 21. No. May 21 was the day. May 21 was the big day because that's the day the door shut. So it was way more important, people here, May 21. That's, you know, from whatever time that person heard it, that's the amount of time they had to go to God, if perhaps God might save them, until the door shut. Now the door is shut, and, you know, if we tell people, it's not going to change. If they're in their sins, if they're filthy, they're going to remain filthy still. And if they're a child of God, they're already a child of God. So the watchman warns for a purpose, Ezekiel 33 tells us, and that is that they might take warning, but that's already done. It's already accomplished. There's no need, no reason at all for us to go out there with tracts, for us to get billboards. And God, who's much wiser than us, knew that, and that's why the funds are not available now. Family Radio couldn't do it if they wanted to. They couldn't do a tenth of what they did over the last couple of years. Thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person online. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please, go ahead with your call.
Hi there. Chris L. Asks, apparently he sent you an email on Hebrews 1 and 2. He's wondering if you read it, what he was saying about the angels.
Well, yes, I did. And I think you had several things correct. You're right that often when God uses the word angels, it's messengers, it's people, or it could be Christ, and most times it's not angelic beings. But I just don't see in a couple of places where you mention, like where it says in verse 14 of Hebrews 1, verse 13, but to which of the angels said he at any time, sit on my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool? Are they, referring back to angels, not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? That would be angelic beings. I don't see that as being believers at all. Well, thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer.
Chris, sorry that Chris might
tip again.
Yeah.
Sorry I didn't hear, talk to you there to call back. I just had to
call. That's okay. That's okay. Welcome. Please go ahead.
You know, Matthew talking six there, when it says, this, I was going to follow up with this, when it says, when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. So when the sun was up, they were scorched. You know, when they wither away, wouldn't that be synonymous with the sun being darkened? So the sun would be darkened for them.
Yeah.
They were actually scorched before May 21, but they withered away after May 21.
No.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
I wouldn't get caught up in the word sun in this case. I know God in so many places is indicating intense spiritual darkness. There is no light of the gospel, but He has defined the word sun here. It's not a definition of a light in the sky of a gospel light. The definition is one that brings affliction and tribulation for the word's sake. So, even in Revelation 16, where this is also found, it says in verse 8, and the fourth messenger poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God, which has power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. And the fifth messenger poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness. So there God is again emphasizing spiritually it's darkness over the whole kingdom of this world. Babylon is in the dark spiritually. And I think God, very strategically placed the verse there so we realize it's not talking about a sun in the sky. It's talking about a time of increased affliction. And we can see how that worked out, and still may be working out in some people's lives. But thank you for your comments. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night Bible question and answer time. Please go ahead with your call. Hello? Hello, are you there? Huh? Esther?
Okay.
Should I go with Bob or... Yes. Excuse us. We have a question here. If you could hold on, please. Esther 8 and verse 17. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. Many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. What about that verse? I don't know. I know that perhaps some people were thinking that Haman was killed earlier and relating that to spiritually the time we're in where Satan has been slain. But... I don't know. Is this a legitimate conversion? That the fear of the Jews, it doesn't say the fear of God, the fear of the Jews came upon them. That's one thing. I think we'd have to look at a lot of things before, deciding what this is teaching. But thank you for this verse. And let's go to the next person online. Please go ahead with your call. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer.
Okay. Esther chapter 9 asks, in Isaiah chapter 30, she's asked about verse 15 to 33.
What chapter is this?
Isaiah chapter 30.
30.
But she asks, but would verse 26 maybe be a literal physical judgment on the last day, October 21?
It says in Isaiah 30 and verse 25, and there shall be upon every high mountain, upon every high hill, rivers and streams of waters in the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall. Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days in the day that Jehovah bindeth up the breach of his people and healeth the stroke of their wound. I'm sorry, I can't answer this verse. I would recommend going to the Family Radio website and entering the verse into the Dynamic Bible Query Form. I think Mr. Camping has spoken about this verse. I can't remember his points, but I do remember he discussed this. Thank you for that question, these verses. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Hello, is anyone there? Hello?
Yes. Hello, Chris?
Yes.
This is Deborah in California, and I tried emailing this, but apparently you didn't get it. But I would like you to compare Revelation chapter 19, verses 17 and 18, to Ezekiel chapter 39, verse 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me read the... Yes, go ahead.
And my question is, are both of these accounts describing the marriage supper of the Lamb?
Yeah, in Revelation 19, it speaks of the fowls flying in the midst of heaven and coming to sup unto the supper of the great God, that they may eat the flesh of kings and captains and so on. And then in Ezekiel 39, in verse 17, and thou, son of man, and by the way, Ezekiel 39 is discussing Gog and Magog, who the only other place you'll find mention of Gog and Magog is in the book of Revelation in chapter 20. So it has everything to do with Satan's assault against the churches and the world during these end time days. And thou, son of man, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, speak unto every feathered fowl and to every beast of the field, assemble yourselves and come. Gather yourselves on every side to my sacrifice that I do sacrifice for you, even a great sacrifice upon the mountains of Israel, that you may eat flesh and drink blood. You shall eat the flesh of the mighty and drink the blood of the princes of the earth, of rams, of lambs, and of goats, of bullocks, and of all of them fatlings of Bashan. And ye shall eat fat till ye be full, and drink blood till ye be drunken, of my sacrifice which I have sacrificed for you. Thus ye shall be filled at my table with horses and chariots, with mighty men, and with all men of war, saith the Lord Jehovah. And it is, again, the marriage supper of the Lamb. For, I think, the third time in the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel 29 talks about Pharaoh being drawn out of the river, Ezekiel 32, and now here in Ezekiel 39. Ezekiel is, if you look at, especially the later chapters of Ezekiel, and you look at the book of Revelation, you'll find a lot in common. There's the Ezekiel's vision by the river Chebar of the living creatures. And then we have the in Revelation chapter 4 about the throne, where four, it says beasts in Revelation 4:6, but the better translation is living creatures. So we have the living creatures. We have the great multitude in Revelation 7. And in Ezekiel 37, we have the valley of dry bones that stood upon their feet, an exceeding great army. We have Gog and Magog, which is in Revelation 20. We have the marriage supper of the Lamb, mentioned three different times in Ezekiel. And we have that glorious temple that's being built. And there's a man with a measuring reed. Likewise, in Revelation chapter 21, you find the bride, the New Jerusalem, being measured by a man with a measuring reed. I think it's a golden reed there. And Revelation 22 talks about a sea of pure water, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne. And Ezekiel 47 has water coming forth from the throne of God, 1,000 cubits to the ankles and 1,000 cubits to the knees, and until it's a water, a river that you can't pass over. And it has the tree of life in Ezekiel 47. Wherever that river goes, men will live, and so forth. So we just find that God used or moved John to write, and it fits very well with the book of Ezekiel as we read in the book of Revelation. Thank you for your question, and let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello?
Hi, Chris.
Hello?
This is Larry Gillespie.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you a message a couple weeks ago, and I wondered if you had noticed anything about it or followed up on it. I mentioned to you an essay I'd found from the old theologian John Bunyan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about the House of the Four of Lebanon.
Well, I did. Larry, I did visit.
Because that looks like it's really referring to the great multitude during the Great Tribulation.
Well, yeah, I did visit the link, and I saw the length of his book, and I didn't think I would have time to really get into it. But maybe if you could pinpoint some things, you know, if you've done that, if you could. Tell us or tell me in a note exactly what, you know, is interesting to you and how you think it relates. That would probably be a help.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do that.
All right.
But it looks to me very much like it refers to the Great Tribulation and the great multitude saved during that time. But I'll send I'll write something up.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Bye.
Let's go to the next person. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please, go ahead with your call. Hello? Is anyone there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, good. We can hear you very well. Please, go ahead.
Okay, Deuteronomy 1, somewhere around 21. And also number 1440. It has to do with the Exodus from Egypt, where God had given them a command to go up and fight. They rebelled against God, did not go up. And then God pronounced judgment upon them. And at that point, they decided, okay, well, now we're going to go up and fight.
Right.
But Moses said, well, too late. Judgment was carried out.
Well, I understand what you're asking, and what you're referring to is the spies that were sent to spy out the land. And when they came back, there were 12 spies, one from each of the tribes. 10 of them had an evil report. That is, it was a good land. They brought back the fruit of the land, but there were giants in the land. They looked at their cities. They were great and walled up to heaven, they said. And they frightened the people, and so they were saying, we can't do this, we can't do this. Now, that was a very evil thing, because they completely forgot the mighty hand of God that they just witnessed in Egypt. And if God was with them, well, why couldn't they go into the land at God's will and conquer it? And Joshua and Caleb were the two spies that said, we can do this with God. We can. And yet the people listened to the other ten. And then God, in his wrath, he said, okay, that window of opportunity now is closed. Now you're going to wander in the wilderness 40 years, a year for a day. They spied out the land for 40 days. And once the people heard the judgment, then they said, they reconsidered. And they said, we'll do this. We'll go up and fight. And they actually did get together some soldiers, and they went into the promised land. And they went into the promised land, and yet God was not with them, and they were beaten back. So it is a biblical principle, and we see it also with Esau, that men, they want to do the will of God after the fact, when it's too late. When Esau found out that Jacob got the blessing, then he desperately wants the blessing. He didn't care about it before. He sold it. He sold his birthright. He meant nothing to him. But once Jacob got it, then with tears and strong crying, he goes to the Lord, to his father. Is there no blessing for me? Even for me, have you but one blessing? And that is the nature of man. Now, in this case, I don't know. Because it's a spiritual judgment. It's a spiritual judgment that men can't see. And are the churches hearing about some things? I'm sure they are. But, we have little time left to... what God is looking at when God says, like for instance, after the five wise virgins went in and the five foolish came and began knocking on the door, Lord, Lord. Well, that really has to do with those that are insisting that Christ is still saving. He's still saving. Today is the day of salvation, they say. The mercy of the Lord endureth forever. Which, I don't see how anybody can try and go to that verse. Does that mean into eternity future that it's still possibility for sinners to be saved? There is a cutoff point. There must be. And God has brought that point. It's when the door shut on May 21. And so wherever there is anyone who is teaching or anyone who is believing, it's possible that still salvation is still going on. It's like they're going to God. Let me in to heaven. And the answer is, depart from me. I never knew you. There is no way that the door opens up once it shuts. Okay, thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday Night Question and Answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello?
Hi there. This question is from Jaru, who's on Pal Talk. He's wondering in regards to May 21. For example, he says, what do I need to do about May 21? Yes, did he get saved from it? Or, is that not? Or, he asks, what can I do?
Do you mean October 21? You mean October?
May 21.
He wants to know what he could do about May 21? I don't think I understand.
Is it possible for me to know if I was chosen on May 21?
Oh, okay. Well, one thing we do know, that God saved all of his elect prior to May 21, which means that anyone who's one of the elect would have been redeemed. They would have been translated out of the kingdom of darkness and into the kingdom of Christ. and therefore there should be an ability in them that wasn't there before to turn from sin. There, it should be. Now, some people can be ignorant of this, maybe not even for a period of time, know anything about it. Like, for instance, there could be an individual who has a secular mind, you know, out in the world, not in any church, and this person God saved some way. Prior to May 21, he received the tract, whatever, however God did it. Maybe he turned on open form quickly. And then it didn't happen. And then the person went back to his life, and he's not thinking of religious things. He's not thinking of spiritual things. But this man, let's say, had a weight problem, and he had had problems with self-control. And now, all of a sudden, going into this period after May 21, finally he's able to bring his appetite under control. Finally he's able to exercise a will to not do this, to put that down, to do things he never could do before. And he may not have any idea why all of a sudden he's able to do this. But as he's going on, it's wonderful to him. And that's what could be happening in the lives of some people. They don't know it, or some people haven't, like it was said before, they haven't tried that gate. They haven't tried the bars of their cell. There's so much in their sins, in their life. It's all they've known. Like someone who sits in front of the TV with their beer and cigarettes and snacks. That's their life. And that's all they've been doing for years and years and years. And they maybe tried earlier in their life to not do certain things, and they just couldn't do it. Well, maybe if they put down the beer now, it could be that God has given them the victory, and it could become evident. But, how God does these things, I don't know. I don't know. I know, though, that there's hope for anybody who is not in a church prior to May 21, and we can go to God, and we go to Him then basically in the same way we would have gone to Him any other time. We beseech Him for mercy, only we recognize that He would have already had to have worked. We beseech Him, O Lord, having had mercy, have mercy on me. And then we persist in prayer for ourselves or for others. That hasn't changed. We continue to pray for maybe you might have done a work of salvation in our son, in our daughter, in our friend. We continue to pray to just say, well, it's all said and done, and therefore, I'm not going to pray. That's kind of, it gives us an excuse where we don't have that excuse. We should continue to pray, and we should not faint, especially as we're approaching the end. And, we tend to have our own reason get mixed up in things, and we think, look, if somebody was saved prior to May 21 and it's 4 months and 1 week or 10 days into the period, obviously we would have seen something by now, and therefore this person we're praying for isn't saved. Therefore, I'm going to stop praying for this person. And it's laziness. Really, spiritually, it's laziness on our part. And it's also putting ourselves in a position we shouldn't be in, that we can determine these things. We can't. We don't know what's going on inside people. And so we continue to pray. Well, thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer.
Hi. Ezekiel Carvalho asks, can you please explain Ezekiel chapter 12 from verse 13 to verse 16?
Ezekiel 12, 13. Says, my net also will I spread upon him, and he shall be taken in my snare, and I will bring him to Babylon, to the land of the Chaldeans. I'd have to back up. Now, Ezekiel 12 is an interesting chapter where God tells Ezekiel to dig through the wall in their sight and gather his possessions in their sight. He emphasizes that. And remove in their sight. And I think God gave us this information to let us know during the church age or during the end of the church age when he commanded his people to come out. If at all possible, we should not have done it, you know, secretly and quietly left the congregation. But we should have let them know, the pastor and everyone. Look, I believe the Bible has told me the church age is over, and so I want you to know I'm not just stopping going to church, because if you just leave, they could think 1,000 different things about why you stopped coming, and you know, men tend to think negatively, and oh, they just gave up on Christ, or they could fill the blank. But you tell them specifically, no, God says in his word, and I've learned this, the church age is over, therefore I have to leave. And you tell your friends so they know. And you know, this is going back during, it's all said and done, but maybe at that time, nothing happened. They just filed away. Okay, here's an individual that didn't like our church or whatever. But then maybe there's another person who comes along and God does the same thing. And they also go and say, look, I can't continue to come here because the church age is over. And they tell people in the congregation, then it's on their mind. See, that's the reason God gives here, that it maybe they might consider. And that was the point of that. And God used Ezekiel to bring information against Israel, which he called a rebellious house. He does that in verse 9. And Son of Man, has not the house of Israel, the rebellious house, said unto thee, what doest thou? Say thou unto them, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, this burden concerneth the prince in Jerusalem and all the house of Israel that are among them. Say, I am your sign. Like as I have done, so shall it be done unto them. They shall remove and go into captivity. And the prince that is among them shall bear upon his shoulder in the twilight, and shall go forth. They shall dig through the wall to carry out thereby. He shall cover his face, that he see not the ground with his eyes. My net also will I spread upon him, and he shall be taken in my snare, and I will bring him to Babylon, to the land of the Chaldeans. Yet shall he not see it, though he shall die there. And I will scatter toward every wind all that are about him to help him, and all his bands, and I will draw out the sword after them. They shall know that I am Jehovah, when I shall scatter them among the nations and disperse them in the countries. It's referring to God's judgment on Israel of old and on the churches and congregations when he says, I'll scatter them and take out my sword. That reminds us earlier when Ezekiel's told to cut his hair, and he does do that with his hair. Well, thank you for these verses. And let's go to the next person. If there's anyone else online, welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please, go ahead with your call. Job 34:20 says, in a moment, excuse me, they shall die, and the people shall be troubled at midnight and pass away, and the mighty shall be taken away without hand. I don't know. I haven't really looked at this verse, so I can't say. Now, it's interesting that it mentions midnight, but even the word midnight we have to be careful with. Not in every case is it the word midnight. For instance, in the parable of Matthew 25, it says midnight, and it doesn't mean 12 a.m., but it means in the midst of the night. So, taking that into mind, I'd rather be careful and not go just with the English word midnight. But thank you for bringing up this verse, and let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Lincoln Rock asks, please read Revelation chapter 20, verses 13 through 15. Is the delivering up of the dead from death and hell speaking about the same event as the loosing of the locusts from the bottomless pit in Revelation chapter 9?
Well, let's read this in Revelation 20, verse 13. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell, that's Hades, delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Now, the fire and brimstone began on May 21, but there also will be, at the very end of the 5 months, a literal burning. There will be a time when all of the unsaved are destroyed. They are completely annihilated. And this would seem to point to that last day of the Day of Judgment. But thank you for that question. And not sure where we're at regards the time. What time should we stop? Oh, all right. Well, do we have more callers? Okay, is anyone else on the line? Hello? Let's go to the next caller, please. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Hello? Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I guess my question is, and this may have already been asked by prior person asking, but in regards to what you were saying earlier on in your study tonight with how, what was it? Basically with, it was, well, basically, you know, I guess you say the first part of, the first half of your study, when you were looking at Revelation, I forget exactly what chapter, but I guess more or less my question is, with all the doctrines that are going around, there's a fair amount of uncertainty in things, and also, there's also the question about October 21 and such. Is there something that we missed in regards to that? I guess my question is, it's really what should one really do about that? Because there's not like we have a lot of time left to study, but yet there's so much out there. And
do about what? That there is different teachings?
Well, like, for example, the thought about there being salvation and then still being salvation in these days, or that also was being taught about no salvation,
right,
and stuff like that. There's just a lot of mix-ups and such.
Well, that's always the case. I mean, all through history, you're going to have the truth, and then you're going to have all sorts of those that say they have the truth. I mean, that is the history of the world. That's the history of the gospel. Just look at family radio. Now, over, or look at Mr. Camping's teaching on just about every point over the years. People have contested it, and they continue to contest it on Seventh-day Sabbath. Some contest speaking in tongues. Others contest free will. Others contest that Christ died for sins at the cross. Others contested, oh, God would not forsake his church because the gates of hell will not prevail. And normally there's a couple of verses that people cling to and hold on desperately to, and they will not humble themselves to the weight of the Scripture as God is teaching in his Word. And so it's nothing new at all that we're seeing in the Bible that Judgment Day is here. And that Judgment Day is that God saved all of his people, and therefore there is no more salvation for others. And of course it's going to be contested. I would worry if it wasn't contested. Everything that's true is contested by some. Can you tell me a doctrine that's not contested? Mike?
Oh, sorry.
No, there isn't any. And so the thing is that God's people hear his voice. That's what we fall back on always. God's people will know the truth. It could be that we could be deceived, but it's not possible that we can be deceived, because God makes sure of that, and he leads his people in the way of truth. Now remember, this is a time of feeding sheep, and Jesus is the good shepherd. And what's the good shepherd do according to Psalm 23? He leads us to green pastures and still waters. And that is taking place. So, but each of us bears responsibility. You know, the problem could be that perhaps people were, because Mr. Camping was such a faithful man, I can see why somebody might do this, that when Mr. Camping would study the Bible, well, we know he would put the time in, we know he would put the effort, and he had such a wonderful track record that normally it was all true. And so we could trust that. Now he's pretty much out of the picture, at least for these last few weeks, and it's leaving people, well, where do I go for truth? And the problem is, we don't go to a man. We don't go to this one, and we don't go to that one. We go to the Bible. And we can listen to what men have to say, but remember what God instructed every one of us. In 1 John 4, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God." That's our responsibility. That hasn't changed. It hasn't changed at all. I have that responsibility. You have that. Each of us has that responsibility. Like maybe it was said last week, the ear tries words like the mouth tastes food. I think it's stated in the book of Job. We hear, okay, now this is the scenario someone's laying out, and then we go to the Bible, and remember, we can always pray, oh Lord, guide me and lead me in the right way, because maybe I don't have a big background in the Bible and a lot of experience, but I know that you will lead me in the right way. So open my ears to truth. And that's what we do. And these things can be good because they should be leading us to Christ and to depend on him more, and as he guides us. Thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call.
This next question is from Chris L. Kevin Brown read from Ezekiel 28 on Sunday that the Prince of Tyrus represents Adam, and I agree. Does Kevin then believe that the serpent, Satan, represents mankind? And perhaps, and is this perhaps a personification of man and his wickedness?
That teaching Kevin gave, and I didn't teach that, so I can't tell you what Kevin believes. But thank you for bringing up that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please go ahead with your call. Jude 19 says, these be they, and if you go back just to verse 18, it sets the context of who's in view, how that they told you there should be mockers in the last time who should walk after their own ungodly lust. These be they who separate themselves sensual, having not the Spirit. And to be sensual means they're in the flesh, the natural mind. Someone who has not been born again, and they have not the Spirit of God in them, and that's lethal. That's lethal. You can't get around that. To substitute the Spirit of God for giving all of your money isn't going to help. And to substitute the Spirit of God for doing all kinds of works isn't going to help. And on the other hand, if you have the Spirit and have no works of any other kind, well, then God has richly blessed you, and He will bring you into His kingdom. As it says in Romans, who does not have the Spirit of Christ is none of His. And this verse would go along with what Jesus said, ye must. It's not a suggestion. It's an absolute necessity. Ye must be born again. No way around it. You have to be born again to enter into the kingdom. Well, thank you for this verse. And let's go to the next person on the line. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please, go ahead with your call.
Esther chapter 9 asks, hailstones, she's referring to Strong's Hebrew numbers 68 and also 259 in Isaiah 30 verse 30. Can you explain the verse or what hailstones mean compared to last verse of Revelation 16? She means verse 21 of Revelation 16.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I can. Let's read Isaiah 30, verse 30. And Jehovah shall cause His glorious voice to be heard, and shall show the lightning down of His arm with the indignation of His anger, and with the flame of a devouring fire, with scattering and tempests and hailstones. And we do know that they are sent by an angry God. He sent hail into Egypt. And same thing in Revelation 16, it's judgment. God is, in that case, if we look at the last verse there, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. And this is the wrath of God, the judgment of God upon men. He, we find in the Bible, uses His elements. He uses His creation. When He destroyed Egypt, He brought creatures. locusts, lice, frogs, and he sent hail. And in these cases, God was using the creation to bring his fiery judgment. Well, thank you for those verses. And yes, Bob. Okay. Revelation 16, verse 6, "For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy."
Can you explain that?
Well, yeah. Now, I haven't spent too much time on this, and you have to keep in mind that we have had maybe 3 or 4 months, actually, to study. And so I'm hitting some of the key points. There's no time to do verse-by-verse studies. But I do remember Mr. Camping has pointed out this is the true believers who are the ones worthy to...
I was wondering if that
had changed. Well, I had that in mind. I looked at the verse, and I didn't see anything that would convince me that that had changed. Thank you. Okay, let's go to the next person on the phone line. Welcome to Friday Night Question and Answer. Please, go ahead with your call.
Hi. Robert E. asks, in the Psalms, like say Psalm 136, where the verses say, "For his mercy endureth forever," does that not mean that God's salvation lasts forever?
Yes. Yes, it does. And when God has mercy on an individual, that mercy is everlasting. It's eternal. It goes on forevermore. For as long as that person exists, and the individual is given eternal life, so it's mercy that endureth forever. In no way can this verse be used to try and say that God would not have a time like we're in now where there is no mercy available. No, it's pointing to those that are granted his salvation. They will experience God's mercy forevermore. Thank you for this verse. And let's go to the next person on the phone line. Welcome to the Friday Night Question and Answer. Please go ahead. Well, you know, I don't think it's necessary at all for us to try and get into the time of day of when Christ will come on the last day of the 5 months. It's something where we had studied previously, and we had seen that an idea of a rolling earthquake seemed to fit best, where at a certain time, when every nation would reach that time, God would begin the judgment, and that allowed every nation to be on the same day. Now, there's questions about that, that the same type of question remains for October 21. Not everyone is on the same day at the same time. How God's going to take care of that, I'm going to leave with him. It's not something that's important whether we're looking at noon or 6 p.m. or whatever time. I don't even think it's important how God brings the end about, whether it's an earthquake or whether people are in their sleep. It's not important. All we know is it's the end. It's the last day, and God will make things abundantly clear. And, you know, if we don't know conclusively and absolutely, then we're just speculating, And it's way better just to wait on the Lord. Now, if someone could show it's absolutely noon, let's talk about it. Or it's absolutely going to be this way or that way, then we'll talk about it. But we're not going to get into this possibility compared to that possibility. There's no profit in that. Thank you for bringing up these verses. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday Night Question and Answer. Please go ahead with your call. Okay. Well, let me talk about how it relates. Now, keep in mind that the Greek word translated scorched, which we have in Matthew 13's account once, and in Mark 4's account once, is only found two other places, and that's in Revelation 16. So four times the word scorched is used in the Greek New Testament. Now, there is a variation of that word or a derivative, actually the word heat in Revelation 16 also, where it says great heat, is a related word to the word scorched. But that word itself is only found four times. And God is using it twice in the same passage, where he's talking about pouring out the seven last vials of the seven last plagues. And we've already gone through Revelation 15. We've seen how the whole context fits the day of judgment, the 5 months period. And therefore, this time is a time of great heat when men, it says in Revelation 16, can be scorched. And then when we find the use of that word in two identical parables or parallel parables in Matthew and Mark, we see that God is focusing on those who hear the word, receive it in a positive way, maybe even very joyfully initially, and then when trouble or persecution arises for the word's sake. And as soon as we see that connection, we realize that has everything to do with the 5 months. You know, I still remember the early days after May 21 and just how difficult it was to continue on in this world for those few days, where it seemed like everyone was looking at you and everyone in your neighborhood. And I remember a little boy coming up to me. What happened? That it didn't occur. And it was just something very intense. And I think many of God's people could share similar experiences and much more intense experiences than I had. And it is a time of the fiery trial, because if we go to 1 Corinthians 3, it says about the material that's laid upon Christ, the foundation. It says in verse 13, every man's work shall be made manifest. Now keep in mind that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9:1, of the Corinthians, are not ye my work in the Lord? And it's the same word. This has to do with people. It's not talking about precious stones. God is using that to illustrate the gospel. In the previous verses, he talks about a building. And he says in verse 9, ye are God's building. He's talking about people. Every man's work shall be made manifest. And when something is made manifest, it means it's revealed. And it goes on to say that, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And that is what type of work we are, is going to be made known, because the day will declare it. What day is that? It's not just any day. There's only when the Bible talks about the day, it's the day of judgment. And we are in the day of judgment. We can't forget that. This is judgment day. Even though it's 5 months, that may throw some people off. But keep in mind what God said in Hebrews 3 concerning the wilderness sojourn. In verse 8, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. How long was that day? 40 years long. And God, it's His good pleasure. If He wants to call a 40-year period a day, He can do so. He calls the whole church age, He likens to 1,290 years or days, or I think it's days. And so He also identifies the day of judgment, which happens to be 5 months in length. And this day is going to declare what kind of work we are. We're on the foundation, Christ. We've been laid there. Other people have labored, put labor into us. They've labored in bringing the gospel to us so that we could hear it through family radio, however we heard it over the years. And now their labor is also going to be made known. And that's why it goes on to say, it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he has built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. So God, faithful child of God, labored in the gospel, brought the gospel to others, and maybe this one's silver, this one over here is stubble, and that work is burned up, but the faithful believer it doesn't hurt him. I like to think of Mr. Camping. Look at all the labor he put in for 50 years. And the gospel went all over the earth. So, God used him, and we can see how an individual like that could be in view. Okay, this one turned out to be wood, hay, stubble. Burned up, but still, the individual like Mr. Camping, who preached faithfully, as it says, He saved also by fire because his sins were laid on Christ and paid for in that way. But this is the day that is declaring it. And again, we can be thankful. We can thank God if we're still hanging on or hanging around. You know, thank you, Lord, that we haven't gone anywhere. And we're continuing to wait on Him, looking towards that day with great expectation and hope, patiently waiting. That's where God's people will be found. But thank you for that question. We're going to have one last question. Let's go to the next person. Welcome to the Friday night question and answer. Please go ahead with your call. Hello?
Can you explain 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, please?
1 Timothy chapter 5, and verse 8 says, "But if any provide not for his own, and specially for those of his own house, he is denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." Well, God instructs the man that he is to provide for his home. He's to take care of his house. He's to pay the bills, go out and work so there's money to buy food, clothing for the family, and all those things. And so here, this is a verse where God would indicate, look, if you're a child of God, you should be taking care of this. You should be doing this. And a person ought not to be putting spiritual things in front of this responsibility. You know, you can't just go off and say, well, I need to bring the gospel overseas, or I need to go here, I need to go there, and forget about your family. You can't do that. You have to make sure your family is taken care of. And God is just letting us know that He expects that of His people. Well, thank you for that verse, and I would like to thank everyone for sharing your questions and your comments, and especially for the Bible verses that were brought up and we had an opportunity to read. Lord willing, we'll be back here Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time with more question and answers. For now, we're going to say good night. After this hymn.